Welcome to Climb Your Mountain, the only podcast that teaches you how to use coaching, neuroscience, and mindfulness to overcome life's challenges. I'm Sarah Maurer, a certified life and performance coach, breathwork facilitator, and trance geek. Each week, I show you how to change your brain fast, for good, and without struggle. Whether you're training to climb an actual mountain, building a business, dating, or planning a fucking rebellion, these tools will help. Listen and learn so you can enjoy more of what you want. Happiness, fun, connection, creativity, courage, and the occasional mountaintop moment. Ready? Let's do this. Hello, friends. How are you doing? I am pretty good. It's been kind of an exciting couple of days, couple of weeks around here. The big excitement that happened, it might have happened to a lot of you too, especially if you're in the USA, North America. We had this big Arctic blast. And in Colorado, that meant that, at least where I live, we just had like really low temperatures. Like the high was below zero, which is very unusual in Denver. Denver's kind of a mild climate. I always tell people it's kind of like Washington, D.C. here. I'm from Cleveland, so I'm used to it being like really cold, really windy, really snowy in the winter. So Denver winter always kind of feels like a breath of fresh air. It's sunny. It'll snow like a whole bunch, but then it'll melt really fast. And then it'll be like a couple weeks until the next big dump of snow. But yeah, usually it's like highs of like 40s in the winter around here. And this weekend, we had 3 days, almost 4 days in a row where the high was below zero. And I was kind of like, on one hand, looking forward to this. I'm like, oh, this is nice. I can get caught up on some things. It'll just be me and my computer. It's like a cozy little retreat. And then within 10 minutes on a Monday morning, when I'm just settling in to get some work done, the heat goes off, the electricity goes off in my whole building almost, and then the internet goes off. And I'm like, oh my God, what is happening? And I went out in the hall, I was talking to my neighbor, and we're like, shit, like the whole city is probably out. Like the grid is probably failing. Now all the pipes in our really old building are going to freeze and burst. So we were really kind of in a panic. But fortunately, everything came back on pretty quickly. I was kind of making plan B. I'm like, do I need to go to a hotel? Do I need to go to a friend's house? Do I need to, what do I need to do? But yeah, everything came back on pretty quick. And there was no freezing. Me and the cat were totally fine. So yeah, that's the big excitement happening around here. And yeah, let's get into our topic for today. So I wanted to talk to you today. This is a little bit of a departure from the personal growth, personal development angle we usually do on this podcast, but something that people have been asking me a lot about lately, both in coaching and just in my personal life, is moving overseas. And I think this is coming up for a few reasons. I think like this has been kind of building in our society that, oh my gosh, like we are no longer many of us tied to a workplace. We can work from anywhere. I think more people are dabbling in the gig economy, are thinking less that their day job is going to be their only job forever and ever. I think, especially in the United States, the political climate is really scary. It is for me, personally. If I could get the F out of here, like tomorrow, I would. Because I have like family ties here and responsibilities right now, I probably won't. But definitely, I'm always looking around like thinking, you know, if the shit goes down, if authoritarians get into our government and take it over and dismantle it, which just seems entirely not likely, but possible from where I'm sitting right now in January 2024. I would love to have like alternate citizens. I would love to have dual citizenship. I would love to have another home country that I could go to, another place where, you know, if it came to that, I could be the resistance in exile. And I know that's very controversial. I've definitely heard some people who have very similar feelings to my own politically, just like rant about how you can't run away and you can't leave. And I'm like, well, I don't know. You kind of can. I can still like, when I lived overseas before, I would still vote. I would still be like part of the process. I was probably actually, it was like during the George W. Bush years, most of the time I was gone. So I was like really into the political process. And then Obama was actually elected while I lived in Asia, which was really fun. And I was involved in the Democrats over there. We would go and watch the debates at bars, and it would just be like so much fun. I actually was so much more into it there than I am here. So anyway, that's a little bit of a departure. But yeah, let's talk a little bit about moving overseas, if that's just something that you've thought about or entertained the idea, or if it's something you're thinking seriously about, this podcast is for you. It's going to be really a lot of fun. So why do people always ask me about this? Some of you might not know. It's been a while since I lived overseas, but I lived overseas for seven, almost 8 years. And kind of my story in brief, I studied abroad in Costa Rica the first semester of my senior year of college. So I did a field school. We were doing ecology. And then I also lived with a host family. And that was my first time being outside of the United States. It was actually my first time flying on a plane. I was like 21 and I'm like, I've never been out of the country. I've never flown on a plane. And now I'm just going to like leave to Costa Rica for 6 months. And it was really nervous. And I actually loved it. I hated coming back. I was so depressed. I remember I just like kind of like the whole like second semester of my senior year of college, which normally you would think would be a really happy time, was such a watch for me because I was like, oh, I hate being back here. I feel like my soul is supposed to be in a place like Costa Rica that's just like laid back and fun and the people love to dance and there's community and just I just felt like everything was so amazing there and I loved it so much. And then I moved back here and I'm like, I feel like my soul is not supposed to be in the States. So I always after that wanted to go abroad again and then had an opportunity the year after I graduated from college. And then I went to law school for a year and I didn't like law school. I was like, I don't know if I want to do this forever. So I took a leave of absence, which I am still technically on, I think, from Ohio State Law School. I don't think I'll be going back. But anyway, I was kind of trying to figure out like what I wanted to do. And I met someone who was doing a volunteer program through the Lutheran Church. And they send people like all over the world as short term meaning like 6 months to 2 years, volunteers. So, and then you'll be working with Lutheran missionaries doing their work. So in my case, I actually joined that program and got sent to Kyrgyzstan for a volunteer year. And that was so much fun. It definitely had its ups and downs, like all these things, as we'll talk about, were challenging, but loved Kyrgyzstan. If you're not sure where Kyrgyzstan is, it's one of the Central Asian stands. It used to be part of the Soviet Union. It is kind of a little bit by Afghanistan. It borders on China, and yeah, it's an amazing place. It's mountainous, it's wild, the people, the culture is actually, until Soviet time, they were pretty nomadic, so herding, moving from place to place, living in yurts, and then like once Soviet society started in the 30s, kind of settled down into cities, but people are still very nomadic at heart, love to go up in the mountains. A lot of people do like take their animals and just go up for part-time nomads in the summer, which is really neat, and it's just a beautiful place, really tough place. When I was there, it was going through a really hard economic time after the collapse of the Soviet Union. There was just like a long time where they just, I don't know, like they, like everything was wired for electricity, but like the electricity didn't work. Like I was teaching English in a school in a village, and this school had like toilets and plumbing and it was wired for electricity and like none of it worked. It was like negative, like whatever outside, and all the kids were sitting in school, like in their coats and their hats and their gloves. And I'd be like, let's write something down, and they would like take off a glove to write, and it would just be like, okay, wait, let's just like do drills where we just talk to each other, let's make it all verbal in games, because oh my gosh, you can't even take off your gloves to write. So yeah, amazing place. Was there for a year and just really loved it. Didn't want to come back again, but did come back. Did go to grad school for education. That teaching experience was very special to me. And then after I graduated with a master's degree in school counseling, I actually got a job at an international school in Shanghai, China. And I'll talk a little bit about like international school teaching on this podcast, but yeah, did that for 2 years and then went to another international school. It was actually the international school that Barack Obama's sister graduated from. It's the big one in Jakarta, Indonesia. So was there for 2 years and then was at International School Bangkok in Thailand for the last 2 years and then came back here in 2010 and I've traveled abroad, but have not lived abroad since then. But that's kind of the story. So a lot of people will always come to me and be like, Sarah, I want to live overseas. Do you have any advice? What do you think? What are the options? And they'll like kind of run their plan by me. And usually I am just like, if you have a chance, go. It was such a life enriching experience for me. And I just really, oh my gosh, like loved it so much. And even though I haven't lived abroad for a little while, I know that I will again. And it's always kind of where my heart is. I think it's just really, really amazing for the reasons we'll get into. So let's break it down. Like if you are thinking about living overseas, let's just kind of go through some of the common questions I get. So one question people kind of struggle with is where to go. There's a lot of kind of hot spots. Like I know one of my neighbors just moved to Portugal. One of my good friends is thinking about moving to Portugal. We hear about like certain places that people are moving, and those places can be great. If you want to move to Portugal, like definitely move to Portugal. I also encourage you to keep kind of an open mind because really you can live abroad just about anywhere. In my travels, I went back to Central Asia a couple of years ago, and we were in Tajikistan, which is probably a country a lot of people have never heard of. And we were hanging out in the capital, Dushanbe, and we met Americans that were just like living there because they really liked it. It was like these two women that were like, yeah, we actually came here in Peace Corps. I think it was Peace Corps, some kind of volunteer program to teach English. And we just never left. Like, we really like this place. Maybe the winters are a little tough, but who knew you could live in Tajikistan and be happy. They were like really excited about it and said there's actually a lot of like expats, foreigners living here. So kind of keeping an open mind, if there's a place that intrigues you or a place that you've traveled to that you really like or a place you've heard of, yeah, maybe you could live there. It's entirely possible. People live just about everywhere. If you need a place to start, just for some ideas, International Living, which has a website and a magazine, they rate the 10 best places to retire abroad. And we'll talk a little bit about retirement versus some of the other ways you can go abroad in just a moment. But yeah, usually if people like to retire there, it's probably a place that's affordable. It probably has a pretty good social services safety net. It's probably pretty stable. It's probably somewhat easy as a foreigner to buy and own property. And there probably are some other foreigners there. So I feel like that's a good place to start if you just like really want some ideas of places that people like to live abroad. It's definitely a good one to check out. Another thing, this is something I'm really into lately that might be helpful, checking out global nomad forums. So what is a global nomad? It's just a person that maybe isn't committed to living in one place, but wants to explore many places. So for example, I had a virtual assistant for a while. Her name is Gabby Rias. She's actually an amazing virtual assistant. I'm going to put her, if you need a virtual assistant, I'm not even sure if she's hiring. She's very in demand, but I'll put her link in the show notes just in case you might be hiring, want to check Gabby out. She's amazing. But like when I started working with her, she's from Malaysia and she was living in Croatia. And then while we were working together, we worked together for I think almost a year, she moved to Thailand. That was kind of just the next place she wanted to be. And then she met her husband in Thailand and yeah, like had an amazing time there. She ended up staying, I think she's still in Thailand. She ended up staying there a little bit longer just because it's so much, she was enjoying it so much. But yeah, like kind of moving from place to place is kind of becoming a thing. And there's lots of websites, lots of forums. If you just Google like digital nomad, global nomad, you can see a little bit about that lifestyle and kind of get a feel for what people are doing. What are some of the easier places to work? We'll talk about like visas and taxes in just a minute. But yeah, like kind of getting into the digital nomad world might be a good idea if that's something you're interested in. And also, I really encourage people to think outside the box. There's a lot of interest in moving to places like Spain, Portugal. A lot of people, I think, are really drawn to Europe because probably, especially for us Westerners, it feels really familiar. Maybe, yeah. I would encourage you to really expand your horizons. I did most of my, as we'll talk about, I lived in Costa Rica, but then the rest of the time was in Asia. And I was kind of a little bit scared of Asia. I'm like, what's that going to be like? And honestly, it was amazing. If I had a choice, that's the place I would live. I would encourage you to check it out. Compared to Europe, it's cheaper. It's really safe. It has tons of expats, lots of jobs if you're going to be employed when you go over there. Lots of amazing cultural experiences. Easy to travel around the region from country to country. And then the other thing I would think about when you're thinking about where to go, if you're going to be working or if you just have family that it's really important that you keep in touch with a lot, think about time zones. So the downside of Asia is that it's really hard to work from there, especially if your work and your clients and the work that you're doing is on a United States timetable. But if you're in Australia, working in Asia makes a lot of sense. And if you're in the United States and you're going to be working on a U.S. schedule, maybe you want to think about places like Central America, Mexico, Costa Rica, South America. They're actually, even though South America is so far away, it's funny. You go to Ecuador and it's on central time, if I remember right. So yeah, sometimes that can be a good thing to think about, especially if you're going to be communicating with the United States, either for work or just for family, personal reasons. So how do you go? I think this is a good question too. And there really are a couple of options that you can look into that kind of relate to your visa. And I'm just going to run through some of the common ones right here. So one of the common ways to go is to retire abroad. And some countries actually have really nice programs for people from other countries that want to retire there. So Costa Rica, where I used to study abroad, is actually an excellent example. They actually have a program where someone over a certain age, I can't remember what it is, can actually move there, have an expedited path to citizenship, can apply for residency. You can actually get on their socialized healthcare system. You have to pay in, since you're not a citizen, usually, for a while when you get there. But I want to say it's something $100 a month. So even compared to Medicare, that's pretty incredibly reasonable. And their system really does cover everything. And it's a pretty good system. When I had to get medical care when I was studying abroad there. And family members in my host family had to get medical care. Some of my people in my program, fellow students, had one had to go to the hospital, and all of us agreed the health system there is pretty amazing. So definitely retiring is one way to go. There's a lot of resources for retirees. I will talk a little bit about those as we go through the program. Another option is to work abroad. So this might be very natural if you work for a big international company. So some of the companies that I've seen working as I've been working in other countries are things like Ford, oil companies, Exxon, Shell, but also small companies. And anything that does a lot of manufacturing will often have people living in China overseeing that. So the guy I dated when I was living in China was actually working for a company that manufactured lawn chairs, and he would go out into the countryside of China where the factories were located and just, make sure that everything was running well, talk to the people there, talk to the management there, and just kind of be the liaison from America working for that company. There was someone else that was in my running club, his job. This is how long ago I was in China. Back then, phones still had buttons for the numbers 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 and whatever. So his company actually manufactured the buttons for the phone. So he was in China, overseeing that. So, depending on your job, it might be, you might have an option to work in Asia or get or work in work overseas. You might be able to get a job where overseas in your own company or get into a company in your field where that's an option. Another one that is really common is teaching English. There's a lot of people kind of scoff at this. Like, it was kind of like when I was working abroad, people were like, oh, you're an English teacher. And I'm like, first of all, you say that with a tone of voice. Like, that's so, like, being an English teacher is just a dime a dozen and such a, like, lowly thing. Like, yeah, English teachers make decent money, especially in Asia. I was always kind of amazed. There's people that go there and make careers out of that. It's also like a really nice bridge career. If you do have some teaching experience, if you have an ESL certificate, which is not too hard to get, it's a nice bridge career if you want to take a gap year between like college and working, between high school and college. If you want to do a kind of a gap after retirement, like you're like, yeah, I'm not ready to completely quit working, but maybe I want to just do something that's a little bit more laid back. And that, like I said, there's also people that do it as a career. It kind of depends a little bit where you're at, what the pay is like, but certainly possible to make a nice living as an English teacher. And as other kinds of teachers too, a lot of people would tutor, even if you're going to go as a retiree. I know people that would tutor international school students that needed just help with subjects taught in English. And you can actually, as a tutor, make pretty good money. That was a very common thing for spouses that were maybe they were, so for example, maybe your spouse is working for a big company like Ford and you're there, you've kind of given up your job to move with them to Shanghai, let's say. A lot of times the spouse would use tutoring just to, you know, have some fun, get out in the community, stay busy, make some extra money. Like it was like a really nice, like we called them trailing spouses, which just seems like kind of a sad word. But yeah, that for the spouses, that was often just a really nice thing to do. And then people are always curious about what I do. If you're any kind of educator, I would definitely look into international schools. And by educator, I mean, you can be a teacher. I was a counselor, administrators, principals, IT people, psychologists, pretty much anyone that's a professional with a degree that works in a school can be hired by an international school to work in these English-speaking schools in other countries. And when you look at international schools, there's so many. There's a huge range of quality of the school, quality of the education, quality of the work experience for the teachers. There's a huge range in pay. The best schools, the ones like the Shanghai American School and the International School, Bangkok, they are like working for a very exclusive private school. And it is kind of full out. It is hard work. It is a lot of work. It is a lot of pressure to be perfect and do well. So if you thrive in that kind of environment, I mean, it might be worth looking into. My personal favorite experience, I worked at a couple schools like that. And my favorite experience was actually working at Concordia International School in Shanghai, which was not the big exclusive school in that city, but it was like well-run. It was reputable. It was a really nice, just like family-oriented, a little bit smaller school, and still paid really well, still was a nice place to work. So definitely don't like write off the kind of like, we call them like the first-tier schools, the big ones that pay like astronomically well, but kind of like the second tier ones that are, you know, just under that, I think are definitely kind of the sweet spot. Like it's a little bit less pressure and you still like make a nice living, have a nice experience, have a lot of fun. So what else? Global nomads, we talked about that, or digital nomads, I think now they are called. That's someone that's just like moving from place to place, maybe working remotely from different countries, maybe working from one country to another. Like Gabby was working in Croatia with clients from all over the world, actually. So if that's something that interests you, there are actually, especially since the pandemic, a lot of countries that are offering digital nomad programs. And it, what it is it's a special visa. It allows you to come in and stay longer than a tourist generally. It gives you some breaks on your taxes in some cases, so they're not paying taxes in your home country and then also in the country where you're staying. So it's a really nice thing to look into. Places that I haven't looked hugely into this, but places I think are doing this are Portugal and Costa Rica are the two that come to mind. And my mind is telling me Colombia. So definitely start looking around. There's other places as well where this is becoming a big thing. And if you just kind of want to wing it, I know so many people that did this. You're not a retiree. You're not getting a job. You're not getting a special digital nomad visa. Maybe you just want to go and spend a year in another country. And you're like, how do I do it? And a lot of people will just get a tourist visa. They'll go. A tourist visa is usually 30 to 90 days, depending on the country. And usually you can renew it a certain amount of times. And usually, I think this is different in different countries, but usually the way you do that is just to leave the country for a day. Or even, I think you don't even have to leave for a full 24 hours in a lot of countries. You just leave and then come back in. So for example, when I was at international, I think it's called Intercultural School Jakarta now, which is so funny. I'm nothing can just have a normal name. But Jakarta Intercultural School, which used to be Jakarta International School. I just had a lot of friends that were just hanging out in Indonesia because they liked it. And we had really cheap flights up to Singapore, which is a whole different country. And they would, once their visa was about to run out, just go up there, spend a day, go shopping. Singapore has really good healthcare compared to Jakarta, so they would, get their doctor appointments done if they had anything to get done. And then they would come back to Jakarta at night. And when they come back into the country, they go through passport control. They get a whole new visa stamped in, which was kind of amazing. So it is possible in a lot of places to do that. When we were students in Costa Rica, we were all on tourist visas and we didn't have enough time on our tourist visa for a whole semester. So we took a bus trip and they drove us over the border to Panama so we could stamp in. And then we spent a couple days in Panama doing some research. So yeah, it was an easy way to extend your visa. So that's possible. And if you go to the right place, you can do that for a long ass time. I think in Thailand, I talk to people who had been doing that for years, and maybe at some point you have to renew the visa you have to go back to your home country. But yeah, definitely just check into all the rules. And this is something I think is really interesting, and I'm hearing more people talk about this: getting actual citizenship in another country through your ancestry. So you might be eligible for citizenship in Europe, for example, if that's where your family is from, if you have recent ancestry from that country. And by recent, I mean in some places 50, 100 years. So I have a friend whose grandparents are from Switzerland, and she's actually, even though she was born here and has never lived in Switzerland, she's a dual citizen. She could go there tomorrow and live if she wanted to. And I have a friend whose great grandma was born in Sicily, and she was an Italian citizen that immigrated to the U.S. And he's actually kind of early in the process of getting his Italian citizenship, which it's a process. You definitely have to gather a lot of documents. In a lot of cases, you have to get it adjudicated in that country. In Alex's case, he's considering working with a service that's going to help with that. And it takes, I think he said, 2 years for them to, make the case, get it all the way through the court. There's some money involved. It's I want to say several thousand dollars just for the service, not including all the court costs and document costs. But if you know that you have recent ancestry, people were fairly recent immigrants to wherever you are from, and I think this is true, even if no matter where you live in the world, if you were a recent immigrant from one of these countries that grants that kind of citizenship, I think it's so worth looking into. I would would pay like, I don't think I have a case, but if I could get like German citizenship for like $6,000, I would do it. Go live in Berlin, drink lots of beer. It would be lots of fun. So yeah. So it also, as you're going through that, it's important to know that like there are a lot of scams targeting people that want citizenship. So just, yeah, buyer beware, really research, go with reputable companies, make sure you're talking to other people who have used the same service, that you're very secure with that before you shell out a lot of money for someone to help you get citizenship in another country. And it's also entirely possible to get citizenship without ancestry there. A lot of times you have to go through a thing called residency first. So if I was to go to Costa Rica, depending on the residency track I'm on, depending on the program I'm going through, probably anywhere from 3 to 7 years, I'd have to live in that country. And there would be limits to like how much I could actually be out of that country. Like it's not like I couldn't leave at all, but a certain number of days a year, I definitely would have to be in Costa Rica, which is kind of why I haven't done it yet, since I have family in the States that needs me and I need to be here. I certainly like couldn't go to Costa Rica and spend most of my year there yet. Don't mean I can't like start taking steps and laying the groundwork. Anyway, so why would you go overseas? Let's talk a little bit about the pros and cons. Like, why would you and why wouldn't you? I'll share a couple of thoughts. Some of the things I really loved about being overseas, this is one that I think a lot of people don't realize. They're like, I'm going to go there and I'm going to be like lonely as a hermit in a cave and just surrounded by all these people that speak a different language. And I just want to say that has not been my experience. I was just telling a friend that, yeah, living overseas was the best social life I ever had. A lot of times, especially if you are in a community with a lot of other expats, that community is very close-knit. It really takes care of its own. It's very welcoming to new people. People are moving in and out of that community all the time, right? So yeah, people are really used to welcoming new people, making new friends. I remember, this is a good illustration. I remember I moved house like when I was living in Bangkok, and I literally had like 30 people. Like I didn't have to hire movers. I didn't have to like, I barely had to like pick up like a trinket. Like I had 30 people in my house that like expat friends, friends from Thailand, like helping me move. And just really like, I felt so like held and so taken care of and so grateful. And then I just like bought some food and some booze, which was really cheap because it was in Thailand. And we just had like a big party after, and it was so much fun. And I contrast that like a couple years later, I was back in the States and I was trying to move, and I was like begging someone to help me move. Like I didn't have a ton of money at the time. I was just starting my freelance writing business. It was like the first year. And I'm like, oh my gosh, can you help me? And I finally did like cobbled together some awesome friends that helped me move, but it was like a little bit of work. And just like, it made me sad thinking back to the last time I moved and how different that was and how like people were just like crazy to help. And yeah, I've been back in the States about 10 years. And I think like the thing I don't like about being here is just that people are so much more separated. It is a little bit more lonely. And I just really miss the like social life. There's also a lot of events for expats. So it's easy to meet people. It's easy to find people. I did hashing. I played Ultimate Frisbee. I hung out with the people from my work. I was in a writing group. So just all kinds of different friends. It's very easy to have just a very active social life whenever you are abroad in the expat community. Another reason that people go, and I think this is like a big plus too, is you really can have a higher standard of living, especially in some of these less expensive places. So you can live in like a really nice house or apartment. You can eat out every night. You can travel, and you can still save money while you're doing all of that. I saved a ton of money as a teacher in China, not because I made a killing as far as my salary, but because I paid a lot less taxes and my cost of living was just so low over there. Like everything was so much cheaper. And often, yeah, you can save money And you can, once your money is all saved, especially if you're saving it in like a local bank account, say in China, for example, actually, I think it was Thailand where I made like a big killing. If the exchange rate is good and you play your cards right, if you transfer money to the US at the right time, you make more money just by like transferring your money when the exchange rate is favorable. I had like a pretty big like bank account in Thailand that I transferred after I came back here. And I think I made like $10,000 just on like the transfer alone, which blew my mind. I'm like, okay, more money for my retirement. Another thing that I think is interesting, a lot of people worry about the language. You don't actually have to speak the language if you are in a pretty like large expat community. You can, and I would encourage you to do so. I think it really does like enrich your experience. However, like when I was in Shanghai, like I had a boss, she had been in China for I think like 17 years. And really she knew like a few words like yes, no, turn right, turn left for the taxi, stop here. But yeah, like I like did not know any Chinese and still like really loved living there, had like a very rich social life, mostly like with the expat community. And then like there's tons of English speaking Chinese people that will, you know, be happy to, you know, be in your world and be your friend. So yeah, she that's just was kind of like what she hung out with. So you don't need to speak the language. I do think you should actually speak the language. And it's kind of a lost opportunity if you don't. But yeah, you certainly don't have to. And you certainly don't feel like you have to learn it before you go or learn it really fast once you get there. Another thing I really loved, inexpensive medical care. Like, it's amazing, especially to me. Some of you are not, some of you maybe are in Europe or Oceania where medical care is a lot more reasonable, or Canada. For me as an American, just being able to go to the doctor and it not like break the bank whenever I wanted to was so magical. And also not having to have like really expensive U.S. health insurance. I pay for it like as a, I think I was like, even before I left, like paying for my own insurance each month. I didn't get it through an employer and it's so expensive. I mean, even through an employer, it's expensive, right? So I was able to let that go for like 8 years when I was in Asia, which also probably added to my savings. You do have to have some kind of insurance, especially if you're coming back to your home country, especially if you're coming back to the United States, because if you had an emergency here, certainly you want to make sure that that's covered, because that's paying for an emergency out of pocket in the United States would just be insane. Another example, I was actually just traveling. I wasn't even living there. I was in Italy and I broke my arm. So I went to the hospital there. And I actually, where I broke my arm was like an hour away from the actual hospital. So the people at the campground where I was staying, they're like, we're going to call an ambulance. And I'm like, don't call an ambulance. Because in the US, like an ambulance ride, I once took an ambulance ride from my house to a hospital 5 minutes away. And it was like $4,000 or something. So I was like, oh my God, don't do that. And they're like, no, it's not expensive. It's like a nice service. They'll like help you like get to the right place. So took this 1 hour ambulance ride from the little town up to the hospital in Brunich. And then, you know, had an emergency room visit there. And I think it was altogether, like they actually gave me a bill since I'm not on their healthcare system. I'm a resident of the European Union. $300. I was like losing my mind laughing. And then like I went home and I went to the orthopedist just for a doctor's visit. And he just like checked out my wrist. And that was $300. I'm like, what? Our healthcare system in the US is insane. Like it, I don't know. I just don't know why it's that way. Anyway, but yeah, cheaper healthcare, such a perk. Ease of public transportation. Like, you honestly, you don't need a car in a lot of places in Europe, in Asia, like in a lot of the world, in Costa Rica. Like, it was just so easy to take buses, fill in, like, cabs are inexpensive. I used to, it was funny, like, where I lived in Bangkok, like, I lived right by the SkyTrain, and I say right by, but it was probably like a 15-minute walk. So there was just a bunch of guys with motorcycles that hung out, like, on the corner by my house, and for like 50 cents, they'd put like a helmet on your head and you sit on the back of the motorcycle and they buzz you down to the SkyTrain. And the SkyTrain's like $2 to go anywhere in Bangkok. So public transportation, so reasonable if you love the idea of not having a car, living in one of these, especially in these bigger cities abroad. I don't know why the US like uniquely is bad with public transportation and uniquely bad with healthcare, but you will experience like all the good living overseas, in depending on where you live. Sometimes it's better than others, but it's pretty good. And then, yeah, like, what else? Yeah, easier to travel. I was amazed. Like I just now was looking at getting a China visa for a trip I might want to do this year in the United States. And I'm like, shit, it's like, with all the fees and having someone go pick it up in Chicago for me, it's like $700. And a lot of times what will happen once you're living abroad, especially as an American, just because maybe justified. Like a lot of people like don't like to give us visas. A lot of countries like make it more expensive for us. It's easier and cheaper to get visas. And I think this is true for no matter what your nationality, it's easier and cheaper once you're already abroad. So yeah, and you can often get visas for surprising places. Like when we were living in China, my friend went to North Korea. She just like went on a tour. She got like, they did all the paperwork, got the visa. She went up to some city in northeast, I guess, China. And yeah, they went to North Korea, which is mind blowing. You definitely can't do that from the United States. Iran is another one. Like I know Americans that it's hard to get. I don't think there is a way to get a visa to Iran from the United States. But if you're in a neighboring country, like I think like we could have gone from Turkmenistan or when I was there, or I can't remember. There's one on the other side where it's not, there's a way to like get visas for Americans to get into Iran and experience and travel there, which is a place I really want to go. So I know it's having some trouble right now, but hopefully like one day I'll get to go there. So yeah, and then like another thing I really loved about being abroad, this is the last one I'll share. It's just not litigious. Like you, and some of you are outside the US, so you might be like, what's that all about? Like in the US, people are very cautious just because there's a lot of suing that goes on. People use the courts as a weapon against one another. If you get sued, it's really expensive. So people and companies kind of go out of the way not to get sued. And it kind of puts a lot of constraints on our lives that we don't even realize until you're someplace that's not litigious. So one way I really felt this was as a teacher. Like I remember going to Concordia International School and being an elementary school counselor and just like watching the teachers, and I'm like, they're picking up the kids. They're letting kids sit on their lap. They're like, actually, whenever the kid sees them on the street and like runs up to their teacher, they like pick them up in their arms and like spin them around. And I'm like, that's something that doesn't happen in the States. Like you do not touch those kids because, you know, like you don't want to get sued for, you know, like something inappropriate happening. And I think there's limits on that anywhere. Like obviously you do not like hold your kids like when no one's around, but like when you're on the playground and there's just a kid that's crying, like being able to just like pick them up and hold them. Like I remember there was a couple that was really like, they were just so natural and such good role models about this. They were both, an older couple. They were both like professors of early childhood education and just kind of like, you know, finishing out their careers, just teaching at this posh international school assignment. And they were just like always like holding their kids to make them feel good. And just like you could tell the kids just felt like little princes and princesses, like when Mr. Krensky or Mrs. Krensky would just like pick them up and on the playground. And it was just really cute. So I remember that, like, that's just like one example of how you could just like be a human and just really like, I don't know what the word is. It's so hard to explain. But yeah, like the fact that we're all so afraid of each other in the United States, like becomes really apparent once you're in a place where you're not like worried about getting sued for everything all the time. So those are the reasons I would. I'll also share some reasons, you know, why you wouldn't. Some things that can be hard. Maybe not necessarily reasons why you wouldn't, but just like things you might want to be aware of, realities about living abroad that I think yeah, are worth considering and weighing in your decisions. So the first one, culture shock is real. It is often more shocking when you move. I've heard this, like when you move to like from a Western country to a Western country. So moving from the U.S. to Portugal, you kind of expect like, you know, everything's won't be that different. It's another European country, like. And a lot of times it's more shocking and hits you harder when you're not expecting it. Like when I moved to Shanghai, I was actually surprised like how easy it was. I'm like, because I was like, oh my gosh, it's going to be so different. And it was, but it was also not like it actually exceeded my expectations and like how easy it was and how friendly it was. And I've heard that, I think it was, I felt that way because I was expecting it to be harder than it was. So just kind of keep in mind. Always moving to another country, another culture, even moving to the UK where they speak English from the United States, you're moving to a new culture. There will be differences. There may be things that feel really hard and really different and really confronting. So just kind of, you know, holding that lightly. So some things that gave me culture shock, and keeping in mind, I lived in Costa Rica in Asia. I think it may be a whole different set if you move to Europe or Africa or like Oceania, like depending on where you're going, if you move to the United States from one of those places. So, but things that shocked me, noise. Asia is noisy. Costa Rica, if you're in the city, is kind of honestly kind of noisy too. Yeah, it's just really was incredible to me. And especially China. China has this concept. I forget the Chinese word, but the concept is hot and noisy, and it's a good thing. So when people are talking about a restaurant, they'll be like, yeah, this new restaurant is really cool. It's hot and noisy. Like, I like it. Like in China, that's a good thing. But to me as a Westerner, even as someone who's kind of like open-minded and, you know, has like some tolerance for that, I was kind of like, whoa, it really is like hot and noisy everywhere. And then personal space is like another big one. This one in Kyrgyzstan was so funny because a lot of times in Kyrgyzstan, when you're taking public transportation, it's pretty crowded. So there's like a seat for two people that's got like four people sitting in it. If you're sitting, people will come and sit with you. People will come and sit with you and then like put their child on your lap. So you just really kind of get used to crowding and like having a lot of people around you. I'd say there's ways to avoid that. Like I kind of, you know, wasn't after seeing it for the first time and being like super shocked, like kind of didn't mind it that much and thought like it was worth it to just kind of be with the local people. So I, you know, leaned into it a little bit. But yeah, definitely like personal space is definitely different in Asia, in Latin America as well. Photo bombing. This was another one. I'd just be like walking down the street. In China, especially, I feel like this happened a lot. And just like some kids would like run up to me with a camera and take a selfie with me without my permission or asking. And then they would like laugh and run away, especially in places where maybe there were fewer foreigners. This would happen a lot. So yeah, just kind of getting used to maybe like knowing that that's going to happen and that your personal space, your closely held ideas about personal space might be challenged a bit. Some of the more serious ones that I thought were hard were like treatment of children, like working in an international school, especially like sometimes like there were really different ideas about like how children should behave, the standards for them academically, physical abuse of children or discipline of children was pretty normal. Like I actually had a teacher who was having a parent-teacher conference and the student, it was like student-led parent-teacher conference. So the student was present and like the student, like the teacher was giving feedback to the student that, you know, this is something that you could work on. And the parent like smacked the child like right there in the conference. So that's pretty extreme. I don't think that happens in that. That's like kind of an extreme example. But yeah, like knowing that, yeah, like children do not have some of the same protections and are just like treated in that way was hard sometimes, especially as a teacher. And then also, yeah, we had students that, like older students that couldn't date, couldn't like go to slumber parties. I know, like I had when you learn about the Chinese education system, you'd see like children around you and know that they are going to school all day long. Like they go to school and then they go to school like we go to school. And then they actually stay at the school for like 5-6 hours after, do homework club, do chores around the school. The students actually like clean the toilets and scrub the floors and make the school like beautiful. And in the morning they come early and do like their marching and their exercises and their kind of the propaganda piece of Chinese school. So yeah, it was like a really, yeah, like if you have like a, like it was, that was like some hard things to reconcile, just like it was like my own beliefs about how children should be raised and treated and protected and cherished and given a childhood. It's very different in Asia, and not saying it's right or wrong, but yeah, it was kind of confronting. Another thing that was really confronting to me, especially as someone with kind of a tender spot for animals, like animals don't get treated well. If you go horse trekking in Kyrgyzstan, the horse might be really skinny. You might wonder if the horse is getting enough to eat. Like people just have different ideas about animal welfare. So being ready for that as well, I think is really important. Political nastiness, especially living in China. Like I'm like, I hate that I live here and give money to this regime that is terrible with human rights. So being confronted with that a lot. Another one that came up a lot that I think is like really worth considering is just treatment of diversity. Like as a white person with kind of a normal body, like I didn't experience a lot of discrimination in Asia, but yeah, like I had colleagues who were black and we had students who were black that were not wanting to go out of the house, not because people were mean to them, but because people wanted to touch them. People wanted to touch their hair. They got like so much attention. It was just completely overwhelming. And then body types. So I had, this is also in Asia, I had a colleague whose mom came to visit who was really overweight, and people would just feel very free to comment, to like point, to laugh, to like touch her. And that was just really upsetting, I think, for both of them. So, I mean, just realities to be aware of. Cultural traditions around women in Kyrgyzstan, like in a lot of ways, women were very advanced because in Soviet society, like women and men were equal. Like women, there were as many women in the workforce, as many women in professions as men. So in that way, like really amazing. And then also Kyrgyzstan has a tradition of bride kidnapping, which in a lot of ways has, I don't know, kind of died out. Like people still like do it as a joke. Like when they're engaged, they're like fake kidnapping. Like I'm going to just come and get to and then we'll go get married. Like that still happens. It also still really does happen in a few places. And like I had actually had a friend, a Kyrgyz friend, who had been kidnapped and married her husband. And that was kind of fascinating because we were actually like not way out in the country. This was like in a town that was fairly close in. She was college educated, her parents were, and yet she ended up marrying this guy she didn't really know. So yeah, like That's like a lot to take in and wrap your brain around. differences in heating and cooling. I think this one is kind of hilarious. Like people are just like way more tolerant of being hot, being cold. You realize how precious we are with our air conditioning and our heat. We always like have the temperature just perfect, I think, in the Western world. Same thing for food. Like they would drink like warm beer, which I always thought was kind of funny. Ice is not really a thing at least in Thailand. That's where I remember lots of warm beer. What else? Differences in privacy, bathrooms, and cleanliness, especially in rural areas. If you're in like a Shanghai, a Bangkok, I wonder what it's like in Europe. It's probably similar. Like the bathrooms are very Western, very familiar. And as you get further out, especially as you travel, as you get a little bit more adventurous, you might come to the place where the bathroom is a hole in the ground or it's a trough and there's no dividers between people. Like all the women just walk into the same room, straddle the trough and go number one, number two, period stuff. Like it all happens like out in the open. If you're in some places, there's no sink. There's just a bucket with no soap to cleanse. And there's no toilet paper because you're like traditionally cleansing with the left hand. And then just you don't use the left hand for anything. You don't shake someone's hand with the left hand. So the bathroom stuff can be like very confronting for people. I know I use the word confronting a lot. Confronting was how it felt. Yeah, so just being ready for that, not necessarily in your daily life as an expat, but especially if you're getting a little more adventurous and traveling out into the less expat-y areas. And then, yeah, missing ease. Like, everything takes twice as long. I remember that was, like, one of the biggest things for me. I'm like, I just want to, like, mail a letter to the post office. Like, how do I? And they're like, well, it's going to the States, so it needs, like, this stamp and this tariff and this extra, like, inspection. And I'm like, oh, my goodness, I just want to mail a letter. Everything just takes, like, so much longer. Like, random things that you wouldn't expect just take, like, five times as long. And it just makes the day sometimes feel really long. Other things to be aware of. I'll just throw out a few more here. Lots of goodbyes as well as hellos, expat communities. There's a lot of people moving out as well as a lot of people moving in. That can be a little hard on people who really cherish established friendships and stability in their social circle. And especially for people that maybe like don't warm up to people right away, that like to take a little bit of time to establish emotional intimacy. I think like that expat life where people are coming and going all the time can be a little bit tough on them. I don't think this is true everywhere, but in Asia, it was definitely true. Dating can be hard for women. So especially, like that was like one reason I just got tired of being there. I'm like, I am never going to meet my person because, you know, like no one local wants to date me. And then I'm like no one that is an expat. The expat men tended to date the local women, not exclusively, but that was kind of like mostly what went on. So yeah, I kind of resigned myself while I was there. I'm like, I'm going to live my life here and just not, like, maybe not date a whole lot. And when I really feel like that's important, then I'm going to go back to the States. And that was pretty common. That was common for men too. Like sometimes men would just get tired of that whole thing and be like, yeah, I'm going to go back to the States and date. Some consumer goods are harder to get. Europe, I think this is definitely one I've heard is true. Like clothes are really expensive. Electronics are really expensive. So yeah, maybe just it might be easier if you're coming back to your home country every once in a while. You can stock up on some of the things you like. It can also be tough, I think, in places where you have very specific medical needs. If you need a drug that's not common, and sometimes like drugs in overseas are easier to get. Sometimes they're less expensive, but sometimes they're also lower quality. So you have to be a little bit careful for drugs that were really like critical to someone's like life, like malaria medication. They would often recommend, like the clinics there would often recommend that we would get them from like imported sources. Like in Asia, we would get them imported from Australia so that we knew that the quality was good. And it can be tough to get home if you have a family emergency, especially if you are Asia, Africa, Oceania, going to the States, for example. Moving pets can present some limitations, although a lot of people do it. I was like amazed how many people, like expats, actually found a way to bring their pets. And I actually acquired a pet when I was overseas and brought him back to the U.S. That's my cat. I still have him. So it can be done. It can be expensive, especially if you are doing it on your own without a sponsor. This one, I think, is always kind of good to keep in the back of your mind. If you get caught up in the legal system overseas, you will not get bailed out by the U.S. And we've seen cases of that recently, things like the Brittany Griner case. Like, yeah, if the other country decides to do something with you, there's not, you always kind of imagine the U.S. is going to like sweep in and send in the Marines and get you out of there. But yeah, that's not often what happens. And in very rare cases, things can happen to you through no fault of your own. So, for example, in Indonesia, there was a woman named Chappelle Corby who was put in Indonesia. She was convicted of drug smuggling and put in prison for, I want to say, like 10 years. I think she did eventually get out. But she was in like an Indonesian prison in very poor conditions. And this was because drugs were found in her luggage. at the airport in Jakarta, and she swears up and down like she did not put them in there, like someone had planted them or tried to use her as a mule. So I would not say that's common. I think her story was notable just because it is so rare. But yeah, I mean, these things very occasionally do happen. At Jakarta Intercultural School, there was a teacher who was accused of sexual abuse, like caught up in a sexual abuse scandal. And it, by all accounts and all the evidence, I was not actually, it was like the year after I left. So a lot of people that I worked with were really familiar and knew the facts of the case, knew this person really well. And they were like, yeah, there's no way this is true. It's all manufactured. But it didn't end up in him being held in Indonesia for years. And it was like this big campaign to get this man home to Canada out of Indonesian prison for a crime that like he most likely did not commit. So again, like, not common, but like, really behave yourself when you're there, follow the local laws. Yeah. And also, yeah, just know that we all take risks in life. And that's like one that could happen. Teachers and workers also have fewer protections. Like, you are not unionized. So like, if you want to break your contract, if you're being mistreated at work, if you want to leave your job, it's actually like hard to get future jobs. And it can actually like have a lot of consequences for you. So especially for teachers, something to keep in mind. All right. So that's the pros and the cons. If I haven't like scared you out of it, and I hope I haven't, like, I'd say overall, it's like such an amazing thing to do. Here's my best advice. If you want to move overseas, I'll just give you a couple of tips. So in some cases, obviously your job will make the decision for you. You might get assigned there. But if you have choices about where you go, when you go, I would do this. I would actually visit the places that you feel drawn to, kind of get a feel for, you know, what's there, what it might be like to live there. And then I would give your top choice, or your maybe your top two choices, a test drive of a few months, just to really see what it's like living there. Because you can talk to people, you can read internet forums, you can read articles, you can research the hell out of it. You won't know what it's really going to be like to live there until you live there. So I would give it a good like 3 to 6 months to just really see if this is a place where you could see as your forever home or your home for a little while, especially if you're thinking about retiring to a place or, you know, going long term. And yeah, expect to ride the cultural curve, the acculturation curve. So what usually happens when you get to a new place, I can speak from experience, is when you first get there, it's just like so enchanting and so magical and you love everything and you're like, wow, why haven't I lived here forever? Why didn't I move here sooner? Everything here is better than where I came from. And then usually what happens is reality sets in and most people kind of go through like a period of a struggle, like where they're homesick, like where they're just having trouble, like feeling lonely, feeling isolated, not fitting in. And a lot of times that'll happen like 3 to 6 months in. It'll really hit you. So yeah, if you can get through that time, what'll generally happen is you'll just start adjusting, you'll start integrating, start just like rebuilding your life there. And yeah, eventually they say it takes like a good year to 2 years to like for most people to fully integrate and to just feel like, yeah, this is where I am, where I belong, where I live my life. Like I don't, you know, even like think about it any other way. I would say like maybe even a few years to really get to that point where it's like deep down on a cellular level that this is home. So yeah, just like really having realistic expectations that it's acculturation does take time. It's not going to happen probably even in 3 or 6 months, even though that'll give you a good idea if it could happen. So a couple of resources to be aware of. I'll wrap up with these. International Living magazine and website, it is really great, especially if you're going to go as a retiree, but might have some useful info for you if you're just going to go like for a gap year, if you just want to go for a few years, if you just want to go and see what it's like. Definitely good resources. I know my friend Alex that's thinking about moving to Europe has done like one of their seminars. He really thought that was really useful. They actually kind of walk you through all the legal and administrative things to think about, like taxes, things like that, whenever you are living abroad. So yeah, really great resource, especially if you're thinking about retiring. For educators, this is how I got overseas. There is a overseas teaching fair at the University of Northern Iowa. It's very long running, very respected. You can go there, interview with different schools. They'll actually send you an information packet, like, you know, what schools are hiring for what positions, with information on each of the schools, so that you can go in with like a really nice plan when you get there. It's just like a really amazing program. There's also a website called The International Educator. It used to be a magazine. I don't think they publish the periodical anymore, like physically. But yeah, their website is definitely worth joining. It has forums that you can go to. As an educator, a lot of times your school will give you a subscription. So the forums are just a great place to find out about different schools, like what's really going on. Some of these schools, when I worked at Jakarta Intercultural School, like it was a great place to work, but it's actually four different schools. And I was at this one school that was just going through like a lot of turmoil and like had like an administrator that was just really wreaking a lot of havoc, honestly, on the staff and causing like so many problems. And yeah, like I was definitely on those forums being like, hey, you've probably heard this is an amazing place to work, but this particular school right now, until this person leaves, is, you know, maybe a little bit problematic. So you can really get like the real deal on what's actually going on. So some resources for you and friends. That's what I got for you. Oh my God. I was like, this will be a short episode and it's like an hour and 5 minutes. So if you've made it this far and haven't like just got tired of listening to me rambling, I hope you enjoyed it. And yeah, If you have questions about living overseas, I will, you know, I don't have all the answers to everything, but if I have something useful for you, I'll tell it to you. So feel free to shoot them my way. I'll put some links in the show notes to some of these resources that might be helpful for you. And yeah, good luck. I hope some of you actually like live the dream and go overseas or become digital nomads or retire there or get jobs there. It is really been like one of the peak experiences of my life. I'm so glad I did it. Even with all the culture shock, even with all the downsides at times, like the upsides far outweigh. So yeah, I'll leave you with that. Have a good one.